The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. At Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, the Memorial Day summer kickoff is on. Get massive savings all month long. And remember, it's backed by Morse. You can also save on a luxurious Cadillac and get more peace of mind at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon with their like-new certified pre-owned Cadillacs. All certified pre-owned Cadillacs are inspected, reconditioned, and warrantied. And there's also special financing available. See the dealer for details and visit EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. At Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, it's official. Summer's here and the savings are heating up. Brian Danahy, general manager at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, has the Memorial Day summer kickoff. Take advantage of holiday offers all month long, like 2018 XT5 crossovers, just $299, zero down. But that's not all. Get 0% financing 60 months on all new Cadillac models. Rush to Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, or visit EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. See the dealer for all the details. Remember, that's EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. Happy Tuesday on the Ira Kaufman Podcast, starring the man himself, the sage of Tampa Bay sports. It's not me. It's Mr. Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper is with us, the other Joe. And things are getting exciting, Ira. You heard those great offers all the way through the end of this month. Memorial Day is a great time to buy a car at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. And Sage, you have a little bit of a cold today, but you're toughing it out. You got your Ed Morse gear on. You got your TV appearance coming up. How are you?
That's what we do over here. We're tough. We don't choose to suck over here, Lee. We're strong people. You know, this cold's got me down a little bit, but I persevere, Lee. I persevere. I'm Brooklyn strong, baby. Brooklyn strong. None of this St. Louis nonsense from you.
All right, Ari. I'm going to hit you with a tough take right
off
away.
The bat.
Since you're Mr. Brooklyn strong, okay? Brooklyn strong. Yeah, we all know that
you're scoffing at that.
We all know that you're Newport Richie strong. That's who you are right now. Todd Monken comes out twice the other day, meets the media, hasn't talked to him in months. He's now the full-time official, more power offensive coordinator. Comes out and says, when asked about the red zone woes, which was the topic of the offseason.
And I believe it was my question. I do.
He knew the question was coming. He says, we absolutely chose to suck. That's a quote. And then he goes on to later say, same thing. We chose to suck in the red zone. Ira, was that a calculated, pre-written thing by Monken to send a message to the players? Was this all calculated? And what's he doing?
First of all, I'm sending out a message to Todd Monken today, Lee, and you're going to back me up on this. Keep talking like that,
yeah.
Monken. We love it. And we're going to get him every week during the season. We want stuff like that. Now, Lee, here's the question. Was he talking about the players? Was he talking about the coaching staff? Was he talking about the whole thing? We don't know. But yes, they sucked in the red zone. Now, you noticed that a bunch of coaches, when they were asked about red zone, including Monken, said, well, if we scored 5 more touchdowns out of those, you know, 50-something opportunities, we would have ranked 8th instead of 26th. Yeah, that's true. But you didn't score those 5 touchdowns. Lee, when you got a lousy defense, and that's being charitable, for the 2017 Bucks, and you're settling for field goals, some of which you didn't make, but you're settling for field goals instead of touchdowns. That's a great formula for 5-11.
Yeah.
Beautiful formula. Because you're not going to win 17-14. You're not built for that. And so they didn't score touchdowns. Monken's very refreshing, Lee. Very refreshing. I'm very interested in what impact he's going to have on this offense. Hopping around from room to room. He doesn't have to be locked in on his position group anymore. And what impact is this going to have on Dirk Koetter in terms of being more hands-on with the offense for Koetter, less hands-on for the offense, more Koetter, more responsibility for Monken? I think those roles are kind of undefined at this point. He says, I'm going to do anything Coach Koetter asks me to do. And if he can take some stuff off Koetter's plate and get Koetter more involved with Jameis Winston in particular, I think that's going to help this team. It remains to be seen.
The key problem with Jameis is fumbles. If Jameis is the quarterback we saw last month of the season, his only issue is fumble. I just think this long ball to DeSean Jackson's overblown. Yeah, the numbers aren't there, but that doesn't mean you throw up the white flag, especially when the numbers are there elsewhere. This defense, Michael David Smith, who works for Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, on Friday, he said this about the Bucs defense, and it was so apropos. The most underreported story in the NFL has to be how terrible the Bucs defense was.
Not underreported on Joe Buck's fan.
No, but in general, underreported. And he's got a hell of a point. Among those is that defense had Pro Bowlers and first-round draft picks on every level of the defense. And they were horrible. Looking at you, Mike Smith. Sorry, I was tough on Lovey. This defense is worse. Facts are facts. That defense is horrible. That defense torpedoed this team. Even with a rotten red zone offense, that defense still torpedoed this team.
But I think it's an open question about how much authority Todd Monken is going to have in this expanded role. For instance, is he going to weigh in on Jameis Winston technique, his attitude over Bajakian, you know, and what are the rules of the game? Steve, I think that's to be determined. But I think the idea of Monken having more of a say, I think that's going to help. I think Munkin's a sharp cookie.
It's an interesting when you say rules of the game, because Monken sort of comes out round one here as he
comes out firing.
He comes out swinging. And before, he was the wide receivers coach who helped with the game plan. So along with George Warhop, who's also the run game coordinator, not just the offensive line coach. But Monken was just the guy who stood in front and answered the questions, because you have to have an offensive coordinator do that each week. But now he's got some real power. And rules of the game, it's interesting. I don't know what those rules are going to be. Is he going to walk into the offensive line room and start ripping guys personally? And does Cutter want him to be the bad cop to his good cop? Because Cutter has said many times, while he doesn't BS players, he loves the mind games aspect of coaching and motivating and all that stuff. So I don't know. That's why I'm looking for your wisdom
here. Is he going to go into Tim Spencer's room and chew out Charles Sims for dancing behind the line of scrimmage? You'd love that, Lee. If he did that, you'd absolutely love it.
Yeah, because it's deserving.
Now, the point is, Charles Sims ain't going to get many carries in 2018.
I hope not.
Barring an injury, he's not going to get a lot of carries, and you're going to be okay with that. Munkin's a real wild card here, Steve. He's a real wild card because he's working under a notable offensive coordinator type in Dirk Cutter. That's why he's got the job. That's how Dirk Cutter made his bones in this league. And when he got to Tampa in 2015, he did a fabulous job. He wasn't head coach. The 2 years since, this offense has gone backwards, Lee. There's no doubt about it, especially the running game.
Oh.
Where does Monken fit in? Now, his four little words, we chose to suck. I've never heard a coach put it quite that way.
It's perfect, Lee, though.
He's not Mr. Etiquette over here, and I think Buck fans like that.
So, in other words, you wouldn't hear Mr. Rogers say that years ago on PBS.
And you might not hear Mike Smith say it about his defense.
But, no, he will never say that.
We chose to suck in a direct response to a lousy red zone offense. We chose to suck. You know what? A cynic might say that's a pot shot at the play calling. You might. Play calling off the hook here? Is it all on the players?
Well,
I don't know. Mike Evans has to score more than 5 touchdowns. I'm sorry.
Well, Lewis Riddick, he works for ESPN, former pro player, personal director of the Eagles, longtime scout, former NFL player. He said on ESPN that he watched every cut-up, meaning every play, of Bucs red zone offense last year. And he said, make a play. He goes, Mike Evans, you're there. Make a play. Jameis, throw the ball where only Mike Evans can get it. He's got 4 inches on cornerbacks. Make a play. Cam Brate, don't drop the ball. Make a play.
That's probably over 100 snaps. Yeah, because, you know, many times and you get a couple of downs there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it might be 100, 150 snaps.
So he was basically saying, in different words, of course, he was basically saying what Todd Monken was saying. You know, Lewis Riddick said, you guys got the talent, make a play. And specifically, Riddick said it wasn't the play calling in the red zone. He specifically said that. So I think what Monken is saying, there's some merit to that. I really do.
Back at the owners' meetings, Ira, when the three of us were there in late March harassing and hounding people and doing what we do, you know, Dirk Cutter really made it clear that play calling was not a problem for the team last year when it came to the offense in the red zone. He was asked that. And I wrote that up. And, you know, we were going to talk about Mike Bajakian a little later, but Bajakian was talking red zone as well, the quarterback's coach. And he just came right out and said, there's 7 plays off the top of my head where if we just play pitch and catch in the red zone, we're going to convert. And he emphasized that, you know, I went back and watched the Eagles this offseason, their red zone, expecting to see some sort of something, and I saw nothing. Just, you know, hit the open man.
So the plays were there to be made. That's
That's the coaching staff's mentality. And
that's what Riddick said, too.
And I think it's a bigger picture the way the coaching is approaching this team this year.
Steve, doesn't that also kind of correspond to what Dirk Cutter would say every time we brought up DeSean Jackson's lack of productivity? He was open. He was open. The same kind of thing. I mean, you know, you don't have to be cynical to say it's kind of all roads lead back to the guy under center. If the play's to be made and it's pitch and catch, well, are you saying they dropped the ball or are you saying the ball wasn't catchable?
I would stop short of saying they're all trying to blame Jameis. There's blame to go around. But you know what? I got the impression, after listening to the defensive coaches, listening to the offensive coaches, these guys know their backs are against the wall. Something's got to change, or these guys are going to be looking for work come January. And I hate to say it, but it's refreshing to hear these coaches say that. Results, gentlemen, results. Not excuses, results. Get the job done or move aside.
You know, the big picture. And I keep harping on it because it's still out there.
That's how we handle you around here, Ira.
Results.
Get it done. Quiet.
Steve, the big picture. And this happens with a lot of franchises, especially the ones that haven't been successfully. The personnel guys are looking at the coaches saying you're not maximizing the player's talents. You're not putting them in position to succeed, which is maybe job one for coach. Job one. It's what Belichick's fabulous at. Put him in a position to succeed.
Oh, he's the
Accentuate
best.
What the guy does well. Hide his weaknesses. Cutter's mentioned that a lot of times. Got to camouflage your weaknesses and play to your strengths. And then the coaches, you know, are saying, hey, we don't have the talent. So this is the big picture that's going on with every NFL organization to some extent. And when you're 5-11 and in the basement 6 out of 7 years, it's really going on in Tampa.
I honestly believe if you talk to anyone that's a just casual fan of the Bucs, much less an NFL expert analyst, guys like Lewis Riddick or Mayock or, you know, you pick, Polian, whomever. You look at the Bucs roster, that team should not be 5-11.
I believe you're onto something there. I think most of our listeners and most of our readers, Steve, look at that, you know, battle and say, the coaching staff's not getting the job done. I believe Lee's right about that. They think Light's roster is good enough to compete at a pretty
exactly.
high level, and they haven't done it.
Yeah, look, every time we've run polls on Jason Light, he consistently gets a B kind of grade. So that tells you most fans think that he's a B kind of general manager. And that does not equate to a 5-11 record. No chance. A B general manager.
I gave A-minus on the draft and C-minus in free agency. So if you want to call him a B general manager, okay.
Which, with the exception of the Steelers, and maybe you can make an argument even with the Steelers since they got rid of what's-his-face. They traded them to Chucky. I know what's-his-face is general.
Martavis.
Right, yeah, yeah. Who's got better curve of receivers?
I don't know who's got a better group of receivers. I really don't. And I don't think you got to be a Buck homer to say that when you factor in the two tight ends who each caught 6 touchdown passes, one of them being a rookie.
They're loaded.
They're loaded.
However you slice it, they're loaded. You can win a Super Bowl.
And Godwin, you know, ready to make a move up, on Adam Humphries, if not DeSean Jackson. You know, they're loaded.
What'd you say last year?
I said DeSean Jackson is not going to be here in 2019. I'm sticking with that.
It sure looks like your prediction may come true.
With that.
All right, Sage, enough of your Sage patting yourself on the back.
Now, it's been.
You deserve to be patted on the back for that.
Ispitz wants Jackson out of town now.
No,
he said trade the man, get the before the draft, pick up a pick.
You know, you keep perpetuating that myth. We've discussed this already.
You didn't say that, Steve. You didn't ask me that question.
Explore it. It's worth exploring.
Explore it.
Okay? You know, this
you
is.
You should see the look on Ira's face.
I'm glad you brought this up because Lee and I often, you know, a free agent is out there that the Bucs might be interested in. We talk about it. We lobby not to sign the guy.
Like C.J. Anderson.
Ten times, we don't lobby to sign the guy. People don't read that.
So you say, bring him in.
Bring him in. Go do all your diligence. Work him out. Grill him. Put him in Tampa. See if he sweats. Do whatever you got to do. Doesn't mean sign the guy. Bring him in. Show some real interest. Sometimes we say sign the guy. Sometimes we say trade the guy. That wasn't the case with Jackson. The point was explore it. If you want to shake up the team, you know, explore some trades. And I'm glad they did. They did that with Jason Pierre-Paul. They needed him. He still, to me, is the biggest deal this whole offseason.
I got him as number two. I think he's the second biggest deal.
Oh, what was the first one?
Brenson Buckner, gentlemen. Brenson, but maybe I'm reading too much into Buckner. But I love his passion.
Yeah, I love his passion, too.
I love
too.
His enthusiasm, and he's got something to work with up there.
Yeah, I sort of know where you're coming from. I love Brenson Buckner, but I'm kind of hesitant You know, I don't want to fall in love. You know, he's like a siren. I don't want to fall in love. I want to see the results first before
he's
I fall in love.
Calling out to you from the rocks.
Yeah, there. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I love his attitude. I love his passion. Love the personality. Love the bluntness. Love everything about it. But is that going to turn into sex? I don't know.
Steve, I don't want to reiterate my column from last week, and I'm going to back it up. If Buckner's guys get the job done, mm-hmm. I am far less worried about a secondary that has been beleaguered because I think everything changes if they get constant pressure. Everything changes. All of a sudden, Hargraves, Ryan Smith, some of these guys, they're not going to look nearly as bad. Nearly as overmatched.
We heard you say, glad you reiterated your take.
I reiterate.
And that reminds us that anyone who subscribes to the podcast can find it at iTunes, Podbean, Google Play. You can leave a review, and you can listen to previous episodes. It's the easiest way to find them. You can even just get them off the platforms without subscribing. Go back and hear some of Ira's takes. But Ira, first, I want people to go to fanretreat.com. Fanretreat.com. That's where you got to get your Lightning tickets. They're hot right now. This is secondary market ticket buying right there. Use your Joe Bucks Fan discount code. You can get Rays tickets playing the Red Sox tonight. They're a real team again. How about that?
Wow.
A lot of good value there. Bucks tickets are all over the site as well. All kinds of event tickets at fanretreat.com. And we're getting closer, Ira. All people have to do is text TAKEOVER to 345-345. Text TAKEOVER to 345-345. That's how to get the first wave of information on the organized stick carrier trip to New Orleans for opening day, the Bourbon Street Takeover. The Sage will be there. Lee will be there. Hundreds of fans will be there.
The commish,
the leader of the stick carrier.
He doesn't like New Orleans.
I won't be there.
But text TAKEOVER to 345-345. Text TAKEOVER to 345-345. And, of course, Fan Retreat, that's where you can buy hotel reservations and flights and really everything you need. Check it out if you haven't seen it.
What kind of turnout are we expecting that Saturday night?
I just said all the information is coming is just about around the corner.
I don't even know the capacity.
What
are the early reports showing?
I don't know the capacity of the room where you're going to be speaking, Ira, in the party. So, I mean, the room.
It's like early turnout in the elections. Yeah, I just want to get a sense of where we're going.
I got a fan retreat question for you.
Sure.
Here we go.
With the Lightning only need one more win. They're going to be playing in Vegas. Who wouldn't want to go to Vegas? Can you get tickets on Fan Retreat to Vegas? Your flights, your hotel.
Everything.
Yeah, there you go.
Or the Stanley Cup Finals.
Absolutely.
Now, how lucky did Dan Lucas and Joe Smith get?
We're going to go to Winnipeg.
They had to schlep to Winnipeg. Instead, they're going to Vegas.
You know they had a rooting interest for the Golden Knights. You just knew it.
Well, by the time this podcast hits, we'll know if the Lightning had one more game to play or
they'll have
going.
A Game 7 in Tampa.
Exactly.
You think Shin Lake will ship Annie Sabu out to Vegas with Lucas?
I can't see her at the craps table.
Let it ride. I could see her on the strip, though.
We're not going to get there. We're not
it's
going
not today. What you think.
All right, I understand.
All right, Sage, let me say this about Buckner. Lee brought up a good point. Buckner is kind of a siren, right? He's the new guy in the building. He's blowing the siren. He's got all the street cred. He's talking the talk. He's loud as hell.
Former player.
And he's got all the – pushes all the buttons, hits all the marks. You know what? Sometimes those guys – they can be one-year wonders as coaches. They, you know, the message burns out by year two with that level of energy. But if he's a one-year wonder as a defensive line coach for this team,
he's going to save jobs.
He's going to save jobs. He's going to make fans happy. It's all going to work great. So they needed a siren in there. I don't care if he burns out long-term. If it works for 1 year, and I think it will. I really do. But I don't know if it's long-term. I don't know if a guy like Buckner has the staying power.
You know, Lee, compared to the D-line, and I wrote this in this week's column, minor. You wouldn't even call it upheaval on the offensive line. You'd call it tweaks with Ryan Jensen. That's the big name. Certainly, I don't think Alex Kappa is going to win a starting job. I'd be shocked.
Yeah, that's
not going to happen. So maybe you get a new right guard with Benenach. Maybe Evan Smith gets it or whatever. Dotson's coming back at right tackle. And you got the same assistant coach.
Mm-hmm.
So compared to the D-line, which is where the focus has been, rightfully so, in the offseason, the offensive line has remained relatively intact. Now, Jensen's a key addition. There's no question about it. But, Lee, I think that offensive line's got a long way to go. Long way to go. And the trenches, there's two sides to the trenches. They've really addressed one of them. The other one, they've massaged a little bit.
Yeah, maybe it's just me. I never thought the offensive line was horrible. Not saying they were great. The only thing that worries me is the health on the right side of the line. Dotson, I don't care if it's supposed to be minor surgery. Guy had surgery. That's not good. That scares me. And then Sweezy, who knows? Who knows about that guy? So if you're starting Evan Smith at right guard, you got a problem. I fully expected the Bucks get a free agent cornerback. They didn't do that. So I fully expect the Bucks get a, you know, between now and training camp, somebody to come and potentially play on the right side just in case. We shall see. But, no, the defensive line, as you said, that was overhaul. That was an overhaul.
I hope I'm wrong, Steve. I hope I'm wrong. But something tells me that somewhere in November or whatever, we're going to rue the day that the darn Indianapolis Colts stuck to their guns, rebuffed the Buffalo Bills, who probably came in with a trade offer
at number six.
And Buffalo said, no, we're sticking with Quentin Nelson because he's that good. And take that, Jason Light. And I'll say it again, Lee, and I really believe this. We'll never know. If Quentin Nelson was there at 7 and Buffalo calls Jason Light, I don't think he makes that trade. I think he takes Quentin Nelson.
Oh, I agree with you.
I don't think he moves down and takes that trade.
We're never going to know. I said from the combine, though I would not have done it, I was convinced from the combine on, if Nelson was there, they were going to draft him. I was convinced.
You got Nelson.
Sage, I got a page of notes here. I don't understand what you're saying. I got a page of notes.
What do you mean you don't understand? Nelson, Marpet, and Jensen right between them. That is a very good interior offensive line.
Plus, you keep Marpet at right guard.
There you go.
Why don't you think that this organization, you said that Kappa has no chance to start, not going to happen.
Come on.
You don't think they want to get him? You don't think they believe that they can get a third round pick ready to start?
Marpet's a freak of nature. This guy's not Marpet, Humboldt State. If he's starting, that spells trouble for Mr. Warhol.
So you're saying there's no chance?
First of all, I don't even think he's a guard. They keep telling me he's a guard. Now they told me Marpet's a center.
Well,
I don't know what end is up over here, Lee.
A far cry from not going to happen. Okay, no chance.
I'm saying as a rookie, you develop the man.
Sure.
You develop. So now, and speaking of that, and I think it's a fair point by Warhol. Now, the Bucks are not the only team that's suffering from this. NFL rules really make it tough to develop young players on both lines. Makes it tough. Not making excuses for Warhop. We'll see how Buckner does, you know, with Noah Spence or whatever. But it's a lot more difficult than it used to be.
Also, with the spread option in college, that's another factor, a big factor. I still have the notes. I asked some guy from Auburn, one of the top offensive linemen drafted at the combine. I asked him, what about that? You know, you're playing a spread offense. That doesn't translate to an NFL. And maybe I could still write it this summer when the six-week period and everybody's on vacation. Maybe I'll write that just for the hell of it. But it's a factor. And what you said with the lack of physical practices, lack of padded practices, that's another factor. You know, like Steve gets this, I get this. I'm guessing you get this, Ira. You know, underwear football, fans are all excited. And they're like, how does insert the name of an offensive lineman look? There's no way of telling them. The only thing they do is stand up and work on their footwork. That's all they can do because they can't hit.
Here's a fair point, Steve, in terms of physicality. I know the rules are tough. They're very tough. And you got to stick with them or you'll get reported.
Oh, big time.
You know, and you'll be fine. It could cost you a draft pick.
Don't they have to turn in practice videos to the NFL every day?
I'm going to say this, though, and I really do believe this. I think Dirk Cutter, by necessity, and it may come down right from the top. Right from the top.
Team Glazer?
Right down from the top. This has to be a physical training camp. As physical, you got to go right up to the line. And last year, I don't think either of you two guys could disagree with this point. The main overriding theme, don't get anybody hurt.
They played scared.
And I think that's got to be changed this year. It's got to be changed.
You make a hell of a good point, Ira.
Thank you, Lee.
Not that it's unique, but I want you to say it
because Isbitz isn't going to say it.
You made a hell of a point, Ira.
Go ahead.
There. The Bucks when they played up in Minnesota. I don't have near what you have as far as experience, Ira. I've never seen an NFL team physically beat up like the Bucks. I mean, physically beat up like it was an alley beating, like some brawl. I mean, guys are getting hauled off. Second game. And they had a bye week already. That was the second game. And maybe Light saw that. It's like, you know, he talked about you got to get meaner, you got to get tougher. And then Cutter always talks about, I learned you take it easy on the players from Jack Del Rio. Well, come on. I know Jack Del Rio's a friend.
See, when you're coming off 9-7, that's the way you're going to think. Hey, we're good. We'll just get through this without any injury. You're not coming off 9-7.
There's another point.
Well, wait a minute. Watch this. Wait, pure, absolute, some stuff down.
Absolute hogwash.
Hogwash?
Team Glazer is going to come to Dirk Cutter and say, you got to run a tougher training camp. That's just not happening. And even if it did, Cutter is never going to listen to Team Glazer on that, because why the hell would he? And if he is, why is he coach of this football team? All right, yeah, Mr. Glazer, we put in an extra red zone period there with hitting for you. That's, come on.
DeKemper.
It's not happening.
DeKemper, did Isbitz just imply that if he gets a suggestion from the Glazers that Dirk Cutter's going to ignore it? Is that what he's saying? Who does that?
That's right. Well, someone doesn't want to keep working for the
Glazers. Come on, Steve. Come on. You do what the boss tells you to do. They write the check.
And they've also written him a check and told him, we love the way your team battled hard last year, fought all the way to the bitter end, was right there with playoff teams ready to kill in December.
Might as well give him the Coach of the Year award for 5-11 over there, isn't it?
Well, look, Dirk Cutter knows he's not getting fired before the season. If the Glazers pull him in and say you got to run a tougher training camp, I guarantee you Dirk Cutter says, guys, I won you my last two opening days. I'm going to do it again. I'm doing it my way. We know what we're doing here, and we're going to win this year. Otherwise, you can fire my ass.
What about the Kemper's point? They weren't ready for week two.
I'm not saying they were ready, but I don't think Cutter's going to change a darn thing in that level because the Glazers tell him to do it. I don't think it at all.
Here's another
point. What if the Glazers don't tell him to do it? Is he going to do it on his own?
That's a different question. I don't know. I think after hearing all the Bucks coaches the last few days, I think the prevailing sentiment from the coaches is, and from Jason Light, is what you guys are seeking is going to take care of itself. Because finally we have depth and a bunch of tough guy animals in the trenches, and they will toughen themselves up within our program. That's my thought.
There's another point about hopefully a tougher training camp. Isbitz will like this because he's sort of a closet Jags fan because Blake Bortles won him $100 last year.
Yes, he did.
You know, fans jumping up and down. Oh, they got to have indoor practice facilities. They can't win in Florida. Meanwhile, they won a Super Bowl without an indoor practice
facility. You can't have a 350-pound defensive tackle in Florida.
What did the Jaguars – tell me about the indoor practice facility the Jaguars had last year. And they were a play away from the Super Bowl. They had none. So give me a break. You need a tough practice. He didn't say anything. He's a closet Jags fan because they won him $100.
I have no problem with tough practices, and I like the Jaguars. I have no problem with tough practices. I also have no problem with however Dirk Cutter feels he needs to run the team to have him winning again.
When they scrimmaged the Titans this year, which will be in mid-August, I wouldn't mind seeing a couple of skirmishes. I wouldn't mind it, and neither would our listeners, Mr.
Do you think there's some Bucks fans out there that would wish someone would throw an elbow at Marriott? Jay Mariotti. Mariota.
You mean Marcus Mariota. Well, we don't want anybody to get hurt.
Jay Mariotti.
Steve, a little skirmish? A little skirmish or two? Not a bad thing.
They have skirmishes every year in practice. They fought with the Jaguars. It was great video. Chris Aurelius Ben started it, of all things. It was right there. Chris Conte has his helmet off.
The bend around?
He's throwing haymakers. It was intense. They do that all the time. Big deal. You know, big deal.
I want Jensen to take a couple shots at Jarrell Casey, one of the better defensive tackles in the league, and go at it a little bit.
What is the subject that Dirk Cutter just goes bananas about?
He goes bananas if the press starts talking about skirmishes. You don't know what you're looking at if that's what you're going to focus on.
Oh, he goes crazy about that. And specifically, he gets all bent out of shape about Jenna Lane.
I think this team's got to make a statement. I think they got to make it early. That they're not a pushover.
They have to make it early.
They're not a pushover.
They got to win one of those three games, and to do that, they're going to have to toughen up. All right, Ira, look, your column on Warhop Monday, Ira Kaufman column every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Your column was on Warhop, and you touched on some of the things that he said. And, you know, one of the things he did talk about, I know you already referenced the column, but one of the things he talked about was the first half of the season, the Buccaneers didn't have the right mentality on the offensive line, and they turned the corner against the Jets. That's what he said.
Yeah, which they were 2-6 by the time they turned the corner. The freight train had already come through the corner.
They were 2-6. And when I wrote about that, I didn't have to look it up, Ira, because I heard you say it many, many, many times last year. The Buccaneers were blessed on the offensive line last year. No injuries to starters until I think it was week 10 or 11.
Am I right? I'm absolutely right.
So there's Warhop with his band of starters. They're not getting it done. In
every
his
week
mind,
he's throwing out the same guys.
He doesn't like the effort each week. And
doesn't like the mentality.
Doesn't like, which is mentality, yeah, effort, same thing, really, in a lot of
Could
ways.
Could you say in a way that he's saying the same thing as Monken? We chose to suck?
Well, I'm asking you.
He didn't use those words, literally.
The whole coaching staff's been saying that.
Yeah, it's another way of saying that. But there he is, and of course they had that weird left guard rotation, Pamphile and Smith. And so doesn't that beg the question, why was it tolerated? Where was bringing Hungry Benenok in off the bench? What's
Lee,
going on?
Lately, I guess in the first half of the year, Benenok, you know, was totally unproven. The only reason they threw him in was because of an injury to Dotson. They had to. That could be, you know, we talk about this thing about coaches versus personnel. That could be a matter of personnel where Warhop, Light, Cutter, in discussion said, we don't have a lot of options here. We just don't have a lot of options. Kept throwing out the same five guys. Next thing you know, they're 2-6. Steve makes a fair point. Guys who are not getting the job done continue to start. Why?
Well, that's a very good point. And, yeah, I think it was entering the Green Bay game is when the injuries took place, if I remember correctly.
And apparently Dotson had the best year of his career till he got hurt. So who was sucking?
Before everybody anoints.
Somebody wasn't getting the job done.
Before we anoint Benenok as the next Hall of Fame right tackle, his first two or three games, he was a turnstile in pass block. He was terrible. Run blocking, he did fine. Terrible pass blocking. He got better the last couple games of the season. But there's like a three-week stretch. I mean, Green Bay, remember, people, the Packers have been around, 100 years? They came one sack away from setting a team record against the Bucs.
Evan Smith also had a rough day.
Oh, so, Green Bay, you know, think about this. 100 years in the teams that the Packers have had.
With all those Hall of Famers for Lombardi?
Exactly, and they were one sack away from a team record. So let's tap the brakes at the offensive line improved that much. However, again, they got the last couple games, Benenok came around, Evan Smith came around to a degree. So I'm not willing to say that the Bucs had this transformative offensive line because they had some injuries. Not yet.
Steve, you were there when I asked directly. I asked Warhop. I said, Coach, last 5 weeks of the season, 6 weeks, the running game was a lot better. And you had a patchwork offensive line. Can you explain that? Now, Lee's answer would be Peyton Barber instead of Doug Martin, and that's not a bad answer. Not a bad answer. Warhop didn't say that. Instead, he said our mentality was better. Steve, 10 weeks into the season, the turnaround of mentality?
It was a horrible answer to a I don't know. I don't
was
even,
it a horrible answer
know what to
or,
say.
Or a candid answer?
It was horrible if you're a fan, you're wondering what the heck happened. Why does a team coming off 9-7 with veteran coaches? And, you know, it's funny because Warhop likes each guy individually. Donovan Smith, he's on the cusp. Allie's this. Oh, Dotson, one of his best years. And then the line collectively, though, they didn't have the mentality. Which is it? It's a big mystery and one of the fun things of this year. You got Benenok's going to compete at right guard because he can run block, and that's usually what you do. You move in guys who can run block from the outside if they're, you know, turnstile right tackles. And then they got Kappa, and they'll let Smith compete, and whoever's an animal, I guess they'll throw out there on week one. I don't know if they have room on the roster for a guy, like Lee was saying, to come off the street. If they don't have any injuries, because I don't think they're going to cut Kappa. Benenok's a lock, and Smith is here. I don't know how they would necessarily do
that. You know, one
of
the points, Lee, and I don't think this is pushing it too much, is they may lack a natural leader up front. You know, Marpet with the ukulele, he's a nice guy and this and that. You know, he's young, and I don't know that, you know, Donovan Smith, who's the leader? Dot, he doesn't have that kind of personality.
And Donovan Smith doesn't either.
Maybe Jensen? You know, Jensen's got like 1 or 2 years in the NFL behind him as a starter.
It's troubling me that you would slander all ukulele players.
So, Steve, is that a problem that, you know, the last 2 years, no Logan Mankins? Now, Mankins wasn't the same player, Lee, that he was in 2010.
No, but those guys looked up to him because he was a veteran of the wars.
You know, he's kind of the Joe Thomas back then. You know, and you know how Warhop talked about Joe Thomas. He set the example, Mankins. He set the example, and I think he's been missed,
you know,
in that regard.
You just made a heck of a point. Maybe that's why they got Jensen, set an example.
Well, Ira, I thought your column sort of hinted at that, hey, Warhop, you're the leader of this group since you don't have a Joe Thomas or a Mankins, so you got to pull them together. And you would think if he's strictly really was saying they don't have the didn't have the fire and mentality necessary, well, you know, Warhop, you're the leader. Jameis, you're out there with the old line. Get him in there. Get him, get the mentality right.
Warhop's got a lot to prove. Been here 4 years, and In one of the 4 years, they had a very good running game, and the other 3 years, they had a terrible running game.
Well,
that's the facts.
I mean,
those are the facts.
What's he supposed to do? Push a button and make Doug Martin a rookie again? It wasn't his call.
How about opening some better holes?
I know your column intentionally did not throw a lot of blame on Doug Martin. Lee and I are, and we'll see how it plays out, Mr. Sage. I thought we saw plenty of that with Peyton Barber last year, but we don't need to rehash that. But there was an interesting answer by Warhop, Sage, and you asked the question. I got the quote right here.
Why am I always asking the questions that provoke these responses?
Well, you know what? Now that I look...
You're the Sage.
The Kemper's asking Warhop about Annie Sable. I'm asking football questions. You understand what I'm talking about?
Well, to be
about?
Fair, I asked him, why are you moving Marpet? What are you having him learn a third position in 4 years?
I like that. That was good stuff.
Well, you know, now that I think about it, maybe you didn't ask the question.
Well, wait a minute. Now you just said
well,
I did.
I'm looking at my notes, and I didn't hear have an Ira quote. But anyway, regardless, the question to him was, what was the thinking in moving Marpet from right to left guard?
I believe that was to Kemper.
No, Lee asked the follow-up to that.
Oh, okay.
And Warhop's answer to that was... It's an interesting question.
You know what? I'm tired of that answer. I still haven't gotten an answer, except we want him next to Donovan Smith. Can I have a little bit more clarification? You need him to help Donovan Smith? Then I got to help each other? Well, what's the story there?
I'm going to ask you that, Custodian of Canton. I always forget that nickname. I don't know why.
I can't get a straight answer.
He always says, we want him to go next to Donovan Smith. Is that something against Allie? Is that something against Donovan Smith? Are you trying to make the left side dominant? There's all kinds of.
Maybe they think they got Art Shell and Gene Upshaw on the left side of the offensive line. Here we go. You got something, you know, you got a dominant side. I don't know if that's the thinking.
I don't know. I know that all your sides are good because you're the Sage on TV, right, left, you're bringing the goods. And, of course, people see you on Spectrum Sports in the middle of the night. And
I can't wait to get back on
Fox 13.
Fox 13.
Tailgate
absolutely.
Sunday.
I'm taking time away from Ricky Reynolds over there.
So let me get this straight. You're on the middle of the night on this.
Middle of the night.
Okay, so you got drunken divorcees and security guards watching you. Is that it?
And maybe a DeKemper once in a while.
I don't have Spectrum.
Yeah, Fox is a good gig for you, Ira. I'm lobbying Scott Smith, their sports director, to rename it Sage Pregame, featuring Ira Kaufman.
Beautiful.
But they're not doing that yet. We'll get an update.
My wife's going to flip out if that's the case, because she don't like this Sage.
She does not?
No.
Why does she not?
She thinks it's going to my head over there just because I got a belt buckle with Sage written into the belt buckle. There's no reason.
So she prefers you to be called a custodian?
You know,
over the door, Sage lives here.
I'm afraid to say this, Ira, but you know what? We really should. I should come up with a great prize to give away if someone makes a Sage tattoo with your likeness and sends us a picture. That would be fantastic, but let's not get carried away. There's no prize yet. Now, Ira...
Preferably Kay Adams. Just let's get
there
that
you
out.
Go.
Yeah, Ira's like, preferably female in a sensitive area.
Is that the first time he said anything positive about Kay Adams in months?
I love the lovely Kay Adams. Between her and Schrager, you listen to him for a week, you think the Bucks just won a Super Bowl. They talk about Tampa Bay more than they talk about New England.
Bucks are more interesting.
All right, Ira, speaking of more interesting, a very important topic was brought up on this last podcast, and we didn't get to dissect it and really dive into it, so we're going to save the last home stretch here for that. Very important stuff. If you didn't listen to the last podcast, cutting the audio back in here. You've got to go back and listen to it. Linebackers coach Mark Duffner sat down with us, Ira, for an exclusive interview, and wow, Duffner had a lot to say. And I think the biggest takeaway for me, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think the biggest newsworthy takeaway was he explained that the coaches got together, quote, they are unraveling everything on the defense, starting all over, quote, building it from the basement so that our foundation is strong and we go forward from there. Duffner goes on to explain that they took the whole thing apart and started teaching it to the guys coming back, even the veterans, from step one, ground one, as if it was a new defense being installed, except they grabbed players to help install it so they had a better understanding of how it works, deeper understanding, making them more accountable since they're teaching it. And this whole, we started over. What did you make of that? I thought that was just huge news.
I think that's nothing but a positive. It's a recognition that things weren't working. It's a recognition that maybe Levante David could be more effective if we use him in a different way. maybe Conte could be a better pass defender if we use him in a certain way. I think it shows flexibility on the part of the coaches now. 5-11 will give you a real reality check, Lee.
How about number 32 in the league?
I understand that, but they're not wedded to old ways that aren't working. They're not working. So break it down now. Here's the flip side, Lee, and I know you're going to be with me on this. Come week five, you know, if they're 1-3, I don't want to hear one word about communication issues because we got a new system. Not word one.
No.
We've heard that before and never again.
Absolutely agree. Well, first off, my first question is when Duffner was saying this, I think the role of Duffner. If, let's say, the Bucks keep Cutter and the defense is lousy again, Duffner's your defensive coordinator. I really believe that. And having said that, when I heard Duffner say this, I wanted to ask, but I knew better, where was this middle of the season? Where was this? You know,
maybe it's hard to do in the middle.
I don't disagree, but at least try. Try, you know. But you're correct. Maybe it was just way too difficult. You know, with the influx of all this new talent, if they're still lousy again next year, I don't know how Mike Smith keeps a job. Nice of a guy as he is, I just don't see it. But you know what this tells me? And it reinforces what I said earlier. Backs are against the wall. I think these guys know it. You know, you had the number 32 defense. Light went out and got you a whole new defensive line. Got three rookie cornerbacks, or at least defensive backs, in the draft. Now it's up to Mike Smith and his guys.
Here's an example of something Duffner might be talking about. Press coverage. Now, Grimes doesn't like it, and you don't mess with Grimes.
He's not the problem.
You don't mess with the guy.
Yeah, he's not the problem.
Carlton Davis, you want a job? You're press coverage. Carlton Davis is not a guy that's going to line up 8 yards back and handle a guy.
I hope
that's not. That's not his skill.
Could you say that about Hargraves, too?
I think you could. Hargraves, you don't have the confidence to play press coverage? Well, we've seen you in soft coverage. You play what we want you to play and give it your best shot.
Yeah, that irritates me, Mike. Well, this is what he wants to play. That's what he's. No, you're the coach, man. You're the coach. Put him in position to get
now,
the most
now,
out of him.
Steve, we're not going to go overboard and say breaking it down to the, you know, the bare essentials and saying they're going to switch to a 3-4. I don't think that's going to happen. They have Vita Vea. Now, that could happen down the line. You got that piece, and it's a critical piece, that big 350-pound, you know, Vince Wilfork nose tackle that allows you to play that. But that's down the line. Lee, they're not going to make that change this summer. Doesn't mean they're never going to show up in a 3-4. It's not going to be their base defense.
I wrote this already on JoeBucksFan.com, I think a week or 2 weeks ago, that they certainly have the linebackers to play a 3-4. They certainly do. And McCoy bristled the few times they had a three-man front last year. He both verbally and physically bristled at that. But you know what? It's a team game, Gerald. Suck it up. You were 32 last year. 32 in the defense last year. Suck it up. Your point about communication. Steve and I heard something a couple years ago. I'm not going to go into detail. It was absolutely off the record. It's not sinister, but when they keep referring to communication, it's really glossed over something. It's a very vague, glossed over term. Now, late in the season last year, I talked to a starter on the Bucks defense. This is what I heard last year about this quote-unquote communication, and I spilled the beans to the guy. I said, what do you think? And he goes, well, I don't know where you're hearing that from. And I said, well, not only have you not read this on Joe Bucks, man, unless you talk about it on the record, you will not read it. This is what I heard. I said, it's not ugly. I said it again, repeated it. And he said, yeah, that's right. But it was off the record. We're not going to run it. It's nothing sinister, but it can be construed as very sinister, but it's not. But when you keep hearing Mike Smith talk about the communication, that is such a, it's polishing a turd is what it is. Polishing and turning.
We've seen so many busted coverages, Steve. Busted coverages. And by that, I mean, Lee, you know, the corner lets the guy go because the safety's supposed to pick him up and the safety doesn't pick him up. Steve, now remember the first half of 2016 before they ran off that 5-game winning streak. Busted coverages everywhere. All of a sudden, they get a bye week. They straighten some things out. For 5 weeks, they play great defense. Great Buck defense. Then they go to Dallas. Then they go to New Orleans and things go back to normal. But for those 5 weeks, I didn't see any communication problems.
Yeah, Mike Smith's in his third year, and outside of the, you know, granted, there's a lot more influx this year than there was. I'm sorry, the excuses are over with.
You don't see guys run wide open against other teams like Minnesota. You mentioned the Minnesota game. Guys wide open.
Ira, we all watch the games. It's May. It's chill out, man. It's good. It's good. You know, they. I like Lee's angle of, you know, this further speaks to the whole incredible urgency. They know that they've in a crisis situation here. I love that it's no Lovey Smith like, oh, well, our system's going to take care of it. And, you know, there's none of that. It's we got to win, win, win. Mike Smith made a comment from the podium that sort of went against the urgency realm. Mike Smith said that guys aren't going to be playing the same kind of snaps that they are on last year on the defensive line and rotation. And we need to get guys ready for the last drive because that's where 65% of games are won and lost. And my thought, now I know you've been preaching rotation, Eagles, all this stuff. My thought is in September, Ira, before the bye week, they got four games, then the bye. I couldn't give a crap about December freshness when jobs and teams and fans' attitudes are on the line in four critical games before the bye. If they start sitting McCoy and JPP because they're worried about a rotation that isn't necessary when they need wins and they're putting lesser players out there, I don't like the attitude. I'd rather see them, let's get a lead for a change and be urgent. I don't know. What's your thought on that?
Well, look, Lee, it's not so much, it's not December freshness, it's fourth quarter freshness. And there's no better example than the Super Bowl. No better example. Philadelphia's pass rush, not particularly effective against Tom Brady for 3.5 quarters. Not Brady. Brady had a big game. A huge game.
Yes.
But that's Brady. But with the game on the line, as Mike Smith alludes to, game on the line, mid-fourth quarter, they make a play. The D-line, they're fresh. They make a play. They beat the tackle, the left tackle that's been in, for 65 snaps, and he's tired. And the right end on the Eagles isn't tired because I think that's what it's all about. It's not so much what's going on in December because God knows. How many times do the Bucks play meaningful games in December?
You're setting me up here.
Yeah. So, Lee, it's about crunch time. And look, if you're 8 deep on the D-line with quality, which is arguable, but you could make the case that you are, Golston, maybe Noah Spence, we don't know, but you could make that argument. Why not use them? Now, with the game on the line, you're going to see Gerald McCoy in the game. You're going to see it. So to Isbitt's point, don't worry, Steve. They'll go with their best pass rushers, protecting a lead with 5 minutes left. But in everything that leads up to that, Lee, why wouldn't you use your depth?
You've written about this many, many, many times. And what Mike Smith said flies in the face what you've written about many times. Fast starts. Not just fast starts in games, fast starts to the season. To Steve's point, if they're 1-3 and they're down 13 to the Bears, not one Bucks fan gives a crap about December.
Right.
Because Mike Smith may not even be around in December if that happens. Win games. Don't worry about the fourth quarter. Get a freaking lead. Then worry about the fourth quarter. Don't worry about December. Have a winning record enter December.
They think that's the formula to win games.
He better be right.
It's a great discussion. Frankly, I believe plenty of games are won in the second quarter as well. And in the third quarter.
And the first quarter.
So,
guys, McCoy's not going to go from 68 snaps to 37. That's not going to happen.
No, but I agree with what Steve is suggesting. He's worried about December. He's worried about the fourth quarter. You need to worry about wins in September.
It's a tough balancing act for Mike Smith. Maybe his biggest one on his plate. Because if McCoy played 85% of the snaps last year and he wants to bring him down to 75, well, which ones, Mike? What games are you going to do this in? And balancing that effectiveness because, one snap to bring in Unrein for McCoy, well, that can change the game. We're talking about game changers. So it's a tough deal. I just hope they have the mentality to, blow these guys out before the bye and then start managing playing.
You didn't pick up Bo Allen and pay him good money to sit his ass on the bench.
That's true. And when's the last time this team got out to a fast start to the season? 2010?
Well, I believe last year, I think they were 2-2. I think they were 2-2 somehow, got them 2-2. But, they don't get out of September with a winning record.
Just in case people at $1 forgot this, the first 3 weeks of the schedule is brutal.
Yes.
Worry about those games first. Then you can worry about December, okay?
Understood.
All right, Ira. It's a discussion for another day, something to watch. Vea, playing time, of course. Often, as the Eagles are dealing with now, injuries and preseason issues change the whole perspective on snaps. But it's a mentality. And, Sage, speaking of mentality, you have any pearls of wisdom for the great Bucks fans who are the hardcores who are excited by OTAs coming up this week.
We got OTAs, Stephen, and our next podcast, Lee, will be at One Buck Place on site, and we will already have Tuesday's OTAs to talk about.
The glory of underwear football.
The glory of underwear football. Two-hour practices, gentlemen. Two-hour practices in Tampa Heat. I say make it as tough on these guys as possibly can because I want them ready when the bell rings.
I would be funny if you actually came out in your underwear, Ira, and said, it's underwear football. Come on.
Sage doesn't wear underwear, guys.
Not briefs, not boxers.
Get out of here, Ira.
No, not a commando line to close it out.